You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Where are we, Orla?
We are in Pembrey Country Park, aren't we, I think, in Wales, the finish line of stage six of the Oval Energy Women's Tour. It was sunny a moment ago. The clouds are gathering. I feel like we may have a few spits and spots of rain in a minute.
Yeah, I can think I'm feeling that even right now.
We're quite conspicuous as well, aren't we, here?
Yes.
Like a sore thumb, like a three-pronged sore thumb at the moment.
You also got your sunnies on, so you're in all this grey cloud.
He's trying to go incognito.
Oh, yeah.
No one will recognise too much. Yeah.
Wishful thinking. The sunglasses, I mean.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
As if you're really pushed for...
Pining for fame, Richard. Yeah.
I'm willing the sunshine to reappear. This is our first ever Cycling Podcast Femina press conference, something that we've done the last couple of years at the Grand Tours, and we thought we'd do it here. So we've been asking for questions. Some of you have phoned in questions. Hear them and attempt to answer them. Shall we get straight into it?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello, Richard, Orla and Rose. It's Moyners Lamb in London, long time botherer of the podcast. Greatly enjoyed the coverage of the Oval Tour. Excellent banter and actually very interesting to listen to. I have a question around what the future of the Oval Tour looks like. We've now seem to have settled an established time frame of around, 8 days or so. And it now seems to have, solid sponsorship from OVO, seems to attract a very strong field of riders, though perhaps not the best climbers, something that you've pointed out during the podcast. But what's the next step? Does it miss out for example, not having that final stage in London where you can get very strong TV coverage and the crowds out, etc., to see the best of the riders? Or is it still needing to spread the gospel of women's cycling to further reaches of the country? I'd be interested in your thoughts because it's clearly a very strong race and actually a very entertaining race to follow. Love the coverage and have loved the cycling podcast Femina, which has really kept me informed of what's been going on in the women's cycling scene. All the best. Bye.
Thank you for that, Moyin. It's a good question. What should the next step for the women's tour be? It is 6 days this year, not 8 days. That's a step up already from 5 days last year. And do we feel that the race is still developing? I mean, it's not been in major cities or towns this year. The men's tour of Britain often does go to quite big centres of population, and really the women's tour hasn't this year. And so the crowds have not been enormous, I think it's fair to say. I think the first 3 days of racing left us a little bit underwhelmed. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later on. How do you feel? How secure and sort of well-established is this race now?
It feels secure and well-established. It's interesting when you say about the crowds, because we've been spoilt by the crowds along the sides of the roads for the last couple of years. It's been a sort of a legacy of 2012. But actually spending the day in the Canyon SRAM car the other day, they were remarking on how they loved the crowds at the Women's Tour, that the fact that they get all the school children out, and it may not be the crowds that we had a few years ago, but it's still, compared to a lot of women's racing, it's still incredibly well attended. In terms of how it can develop, I think this year's racing, certainly from stage three on, has been really exciting. I think the course and effort put into the course is really well rewarded when it comes to the racing. I would like to see it go to new territories, though. We've had it going from East Anglia over to Wales the last couple of years, and that's wonderful and it's lovely. I'd like to push further north, really, or even further south, along the south coast. I'd love to see it go to Scotland. I'd love to see it go to Northern Ireland because we're always the forgotten cousin. And we've got some amazing terrain over there. And that's the way I think we could open it out a little bit, because what the Women's Tour and the Tour of Britain have been able to do is bring new fans into the sport. And even if they're only casual fans for a couple of weeks, you know, building up to it and then coming along the side of the road. If you do that in new territories, in new parts of the UK, then you bring new fans to it. And I saw that with the Giro Gran Partenza in 2014, wasn't it? The euphoria around the start of that. Lots of people who never understood what bike racing was about suddenly got into it. Some of them stay in the sport, and that's as much as you can expect.
Which was
really.
Belfast. Mm. Which is Belfast, Dublin.
Yeah. I mean, I'd definitely say that you could go to new places. We have been kind of, for the last couple of years, doing the M4 swoop, haven't we? East Coast to West Coast. And it does mean that it does build into, you get to Wales and you're building into all the mountains and the slightly more, climby areas, which is great. But yeah, definitely think it could go further afield. Moeen mentioned about going to London, and they did do that a few years ago when Jolien Daw won. And I have to say, I don't think that is necessarily the answer. I don't think it needs it either. I mean, I think I was a bit disappointed, especially as being a London girl. I was a bit disappointed with the crowds on a Sunday. You'd be surprised how sparse it looks when you're doing city circuit around London, because people on a Sunday crossing the roads, they're doing their own business. They might stop briefly, but it's not really holding people's attention. So I don't think that's the answer. But I think if we were to go to new places, maybe what it does need is to add more days onto the race, because certainly to get to Scotland, unless
well,
you
why
were
not
to
start in Scotland?
Well, you could
we
do the whole thing.
Start
Scotland.
Down here. I don't think we need extra days.
Yeah,
we
I know,
could
but
do
it,
Northern Ireland.
But then it's also the logistics of it, isn't it? It's the fact that clearly these like Suffolk, Warwickshire, they've been supporting this race for many years and obviously see a return in it and are willing to put in the investment for it. I'm sure if it was that Scotland came forward and wanted to offer more money or money for a few stages, then that's where it's a business decision at the end of the day, isn't it?
And the business model of Sweet Spot, the Tour of Britain as well, is they go where local authorities offer money. Now, there's clearly money available in Scotland because there's a new Women's Tour of Scotland this year. And that money, you run, start a new event from scratch, which unfortunately clashes with other events. So I'm not sure how good a field it will have. Could the Women's Tour not have just been held almost entirely in Scotland one year if it's 6 days? I don't know. I think if this event is to really kick on, and with the Giro Rosa sort of establishes that maybe the premier women's stage race and the new Scandinavian stage race in a couple of years coming along, which is also going to be 10 days, I believe. Should the Women's Tour not be 10 days? And it should certainly have live television coverage.
I think that's the key, really, and that's the difficulty. It needs live television coverage because some of the stages that we've seen, and we've witnessed them because we've had laps, finishing laps, for example, or I saw it from a team car. Rose, you saw one of the stages from a team car, and you get a totally different perspective. Stage 4, for example, stage 5. Well, stages 4 and 5 were absolutely thrilling to watch, and you don't always get the best bits with the highlights because they've got so much to fit in. If you're watching it live, you get to judge for yourself exactly what the racing's like. And it's unfortunate, it's very difficult to do in the UK because we don't have the same 4G coverage that we have in the rest of Europe. And it simply comes down to that. It makes it much more expensive then because they've got to boost the receivers or whatever it is that they do. But I think live coverage would be the logical next step. And I think then people would realise how good a race it can be.
It's also a necessary step if the Women's Tour wants to stay as a World Tour event next year, because apparently that is going to be one of the stipulations to becoming a World Tour event, is to have a live stream of some description.
Well, on that note, let's hear a little interview I did at the Kent Cycle Park with Morgan Gauthier, who's in charge of the Women's World Tour for the UCI, and they're in the process of finalising a calendar now for next year. And as you say, Rose, there are going to be new stipulations on organisers and teams for next year, which are putting a lot of demands on organisers and teams. And I think it's reaching a point where either the teams and race are going to have to step up or the UCI are going to have to compromise in terms of what they're asking for. Here's what Morgan said at the Kent Cycle Park the other day before we get on with the questions.
Yeah, so you've been here a couple of days. I mean, what are your impressions of this race?
This race is for sure one of the best of the UCI Women's World Tour. It's really well organised. It's a really professional stage race. They extend from 5 to 6 days that's the first year, so it's really, really good. And they organize the race since 5 years, if I'm right, and since 5 years they really deliver a high standards level for women racing. I talk with the team, with the riders, they are all super happy to be there, so it's really good.
This year is a kind of transition year, I guess, for UCI Women's World Tour, and looking ahead to big changes next year. How is that going? Because there's obviously a lot of changes coming over the winter.
Yeah, so the first big changes is related to the teams. So we will now have two tiers of teams. It's really well welcome. Some teams know that it's going to be hard, but it's welcome because we know that we need it in women's cycling now. We are at the step where we've got some teams which are really professional, with some teams which are not at all. And we need to give to these teams which are professional. We put the money on the table every year, which help the riders to develop, to give them this special status. So this is the first big part. And the second part is really regarding the events, where we required for all World Tour event next year to be live. We've got all the organizers who were part of the World Tour who signed the engagement form from that. The calendar will be proposed to the UCI Management Committee in 2 weeks and will be published after that.
I mean, that's going to be a challenge, isn't it, for races, including this one, to have live television coverage?
Yes and no. We already have, so we've got 23 events in the UCI Women's World Tour calendar, and this year we're going to have 18 which are live, so which means there is not a lot which are missing that. Here, I know they are working on that. It's a big step to move forward, but also they want it. After now being a six-day race, they really want to move forward and to continue to have the growth of women's cycling. Women's cycling is really important in the UK, and the race really want to follow this. So
Will the UCI be able to help races or teams to make that next step? Because it's expensive, obviously, to have live TV coverage.
So for the live TV coverage, as I said, there is already a lot of races which have that. The UCI won't put money on the table for the races, because if we do it for one, we need to do it for all, which is just not possible financially to do it. But we are there to help organizer. And since years we are helping organizer, if they don't have broadcaster to broadcast the race, we help them, we give contact, etc. So we're working in really close collaboration. Like, the growth of women's cycling is just, it's not just the teams on their own and organizer on their own and UCI on their own. It's how to work better all together to have women's cycling growing.
I just finally, there was stories recently about ASO, the ASO events, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Flèche Wallonne. They were suggesting that they might pull their races from the Women's World Tour because they're not prepared to provide live television coverage. Is there any progress with that, or have been any further discussions? Do you know what might happen there?
Yeah, we are working with them, and as I said, the calendar will be presented in the coming weeks to the UCI Management Committee and will be approved following that. So we will have the official calendar published in 3 weeks about that.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019. As they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Bib shorts are the most essential part of your cycling kit. Hi, my name is Alexis Ryan, and I race for Canyon SRAM. It's where you get the most friction, it's where you possibly get the most discomfort, and to have a pair of shorts that are comfortable and reliable, they wear well, and they're made out of high-quality materials, that's really important for us as professionals. My Rafa bib shorts are the best in the world.
So that was Morgane Gauthier on the UCI, and interesting that we'll hear in the next couple of weeks, she said, about the calendar for next year. And let's have another question.
Hi, I'm Rafa. I'm 4 years old, and is Mariana okay from her class?
Thank you, Martha, age four, asking after
makes
Marianne Vos.
Makes me cry when I hear voices
well,
that age.
Voices.
It's so lovely.
Orla, you spoke to Marianne Vos's father this morning.
Yep. Tim Harris actually introduced me to Henk Vos the other day, because Tim is single-handedly trying to improve my Dutch while we're here, because he's a fluent Flemish speaker. So now Tim refuses to speak to me in English. He only does Dutch / Flemish. So he introduced me to Henk. So I get a goeiemorgen every morning now from Henk, and we have a little chat. And he said, ze gaat goed, that she's doing well. And she was out on her bike already yesterday. So she only crashed on, what, stage 3? Isn't that right, stage three?
Yes.
She went home on stage four. This is stage six. So, yeah, she had maybe one day off the bike and she's back on the bike again yesterday. He says that she's doing well. No broken bones. He said, mercifully, it could have been a lot worse. But obviously, I foolishly said, yeah, she was quite lucky, wasn't she? And he said, yeah, she wasn't really lucky actually crashing into a pole. But I was asking as well whether she watches races whenever, you know, I'm always intrigued by riders whenever they crash out of a race. Do they get FOMO and want to find out what's going on? But he said, no, she's not watching the race from afar. I think it's too painful because she was doing so well and because she had such strong hopes here. But the good news is physically she's well. I think mentally she's quite well and back on her bike.
Hello, Cycling Podcast Femina. I'm Isabel and I live in Canada, but I'm originally from Colombia, and I wanted to first start by thanking you for taking the sport of feminine cycling seriously and doing the amazing job you do. You deserve that podcasting prize and more. I also wanted to ask you whether or not you think that there should be more races like the Giro Rosa, longer, more Grand Tour style races, and if stages should be longer. I know that the British Tour has longer stages this time, and it seems to be something novel and different, and I'm wondering if maybe the limits should be removed. Thank you.
Thanks, Isabel, for your question. Another sort of question about the Giro Rosa, and I guess where the, you know, these races stand. I think I mentioned the new race coming in Scandinavia, not next year, but the year after, 2021, Battle of North, and it's across three Scandinavian countries over 10 days. And it seems to be pitching itself as being a direct competitor to the Giro Rosa, for, I suppose, that honour of the toughest women's stage race.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because it's going to go across Norway, Sweden and Denmark. So it's a joint venture. And with that setting up, 10 days like the Giro Rosa, then I think now is the time also to have a third one and have kind of the structure that the men's calendar has, where you have the three grand tours, each of them being 10 days long. And then that kind of just gives a bit more narrative to the whole season, I think. Because otherwise you have these kind of sudden rush of stage races. You have Bira.
Narrative.
Oh, yeah. Narrative. We have, you have Bira, you have Tour of California, you have Chongming, and then you go straight into the women's tour. It's kind of like just a flurry of stage races with none of them being put on more of a pedestal than the others. But I think it would be great to see the women's tour become a 10-day race so that it can become part of a trio of grand tours, I think.
An interesting Battle of North, in their announcement, promised live TV coverage. That was part of the initial announcement.
Well, this is what I think the key is, and I don't apologise for any indication of repetition here, but that has to be fundamental. It's not about bringing on board more races. It's not about adding an extra 10-day stage race for the sake of it. I think first and foremost, it's consolidating what we have. It's trying to encourage more investment, I guess, into a race like this, the Women's Tour, whereby they can then justify in a business sense doing the necessary to be able to provide live coverage. It's about doing the same for the Giro Rosa, because I mean, by all accounts, it's a wonderful race. I've hardly ever seen any of it in my life, you know, and I just think if we could have live coverage of that, proper highlights, whatever it might be, then that would be the first step before then we look to build on anything. I think we have to make sure that what's been built already has solid foundations. And then absolutely, you know, in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, if we're looking at the equivalent of three Grand Tours, fine. I think for the women at this stage, a 10-day stage race is more than enough. And that's not to say that women can't handle longer. It's just the size of the rosters. It's the size of the teams that we have and the strength and depth in the peloton. You don't want to be rushing ahead with something unless the sport is actually ready, because it does more harm than good then.
Isabel also asked about the length of the stages. We chatted to Tim Harris this morning, didn't we, Orla? And I've heard really conflicting views on this week, because the stages here are very long. They don't need to be as long as they are, because they're often not, you know, they're not going in a straight line from one place to another. So they do try and make the stages quite long. Now, I've heard the view from a couple of teams saying that if they just make the stages quite long, it'll fall maybe into the same pattern as men's racing, where along a break will go and get a big lead, and then everyone will kind of stop for a natural break, and then they'll gradually reel them back in, and there's a kind of a formula to that. And yet at the same time, Tim Harris, who we spoke to, and who's watched more bike racing than I've had hot dinners, Tim is a big fan of long stages. He thinks that the long stages really draw out the best riders. But I don't know, I can see both sides of the argument. Shorter stages can make for more aggressive racing, whether it's men's or women's.
Except yesterday, stage 5 was the longest stage of this year's race, and it was by far the most dramatic. So it depends on how it's raced. I think the thing with this year's race is that it had been billed as the toughest ever, the longest ever, all the rest of it. And what we had then was that the main teams, or the teams with proper GC hopes, there's no way they're going to be racing a first flat stage. They're not going to be racing necessarily the cyclopark stage. They're going to be waiting until later. What we really need to see is some of the smaller teams without GC ambitions going on the attack on these other stages, however long they are. And I think we can't forget that women's cycling is in a period of development, and it's progressed hugely over the last couple of years. We're not at a stage yet where we can say this is what women's cycling is like and this is how races are raced. I think some of these smaller teams are maybe in a couple of years I'm going to realise that that's the best way to race it for them. When, you know, when we were chatting to people in the start line in East Anglia, some of the smaller teams were saying, well, of course we've got to conserve our energy because we've got 6 really long days ahead. Now that they'll have done 6 long days of a women's tour, will they perhaps have a better expectation of the race come next year, in the same way that this year we haven't waited for the hard stages before the actions happened? We've had racing before then. Do these things just tend to settle down, you know, after a couple of years of flux? I don't think we know yet, really.
There's an interesting point about live TV coverage. Obviously, that's great for the fans and people wanting to follow it. But for the riders as well, I think there's an argument that having live TV coverage makes for more exciting racing, which sounds daft, but people do perform for the cameras. And it just puts on a bigger, more important stage, I think. And I think that just the presence of TV cameras and live TV coverage would actually make for more exciting racing.
Also, from a business point of view, you're just getting a lot more bang for your buck, aren't you, as a sponsor? If you can say X number of eyeballs are seeing your sponsor emblazoned on a jersey for this many hours every day on ITV, I mean, that's a really valuable thing. And then that's going to boost far more investment in the sport in general.
Hi, Cycling Podcast Feminine. This is Hannah Nicklin. Thanks for your coverage of the Women's Tour. I've just moved to Copenhagen, which is great for cycling, but not so good for ITV coverage. So I've really appreciated the chance to catch up with the action on the podcast. My question for the press conference is, if you could design a Women's Tour solely on the basis of source materials for all those themed tales of the stage, what towns would you take it to and why? Thanks very much. Keep up the good work.
That was Hannah Nicklin, and we know Hannah because she organised the inaugural Cycling Podcast Femina RAFA Women's 100 for us last year, which you went on, Rose.
I did, yeah. Lovely to hear from Hannah, actually.
Yes, thank you, and a great question, Hannah. One, obviously, directed mainly at Orla.
I don't think it is directed mainly at me, but I've had a little think about this, and I think it's a brilliant question, Hannah, and it actually links into what I said earlier about how the Women's Tour can develop, not only for my stories of the stage.
I have a feeling we're going across the... Irish Channel, don't you?
Why not? I would have at least one stage in a little place called Ballaghy, which isn't that far from where I grew up. It's in County Derry, and it is the homeland of the Nobel poet Seamus Heaney, who's my favourite poet of all time. So I would throw as many Seamus Heaney references.
Give us some references that might make the cut.
Well, digging is one of his
most
famous.
I'll dig with my pen.
Between my finger and my thumb, my squat pen rests. I'll dig with it.
Snug as a gun.
Sorry, yeah, snug as a gun. And that's a beautiful poem. It comes from a farming background, and his father's like a potato farmer.
It's an amazing poem, that.
It's absolutely beautiful, isn't it? I find his poetry so accessible, and I don't know if that's because all of the landscape that he describes is so familiar to me, but I've got a few works of his in my bookshelf in Amsterdam, and if I'm feeling homesick, I sometimes take a bit of Seamus Heaney off the shelf. I think he's a beautiful poet.
So that's one.
So that's where it starts. That's the grande part.
That's the grande part of being Balahi. Yeah. That'd be a good one. I would then take it right down, lowbrow, head to Belfast for a bit of Van Morrison. We could have a brown eyed girl.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say he was lowbrow, is he?
Well, he's not Nobel Prize winning, though, is he?
But old brow.
Middle brow. Yeah, old brow. So I'd do that. And then I'd hop across to Scotland, keeping with my Celtic brothers, and I'd love to have a stage in Glasgow.
I thought that we were going to take this up at some point, but I think
it's all a three stage. Because okay. I'd love to get a bit of Belle and Sebastian in there. We've both seen Belle and Sebastian in concert, haven't we? We went to a festival with our respective other half.
The cuckoo.
I didn't see it coming. She's losing it. Is it wicked not to care on a boring stage?
Oh, yeah, these are good.
Yeah. Feelings, if you're feeling sinister, there's lots of references there. Mm. So they'd be my three for starters. There we go. Rose.
Where are they from in Scotland?
Glasgow.
Ah,
well,
Glasgow.
Well, my brother and his wife.
Okay, well, maybe
Murdoch, the lead singer, is actually from Ayr. And that is also the birthplace of Robbie Burns, the national poet. So you could combine a bit of Burns and a bit of
that could be
Belle
the fourth stage.
That's some good transfers as well, doing it that way. Not too much time in the car.
Going to the business lounge,
fantastic.
All the riders.
Yeah, I like the sound of this.
Which Robbie Burns would you put in? Is he not a bit difficult to fit in a race?
I think we've discovered
I can shoehorn
anything. Yeah, that's true.
Easy. Yeah, there's also love poetry and all kinds of stuff from Robbie Burns.
Yeah, you're a real expert.
Richard is digging into the depths of his memory.
Yeah.
You're
putting me on the spot here. Let's move down. We're not going to go south from there.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say, I always feel like doing partly I thought about doing a Sting stage. Where is he from? Newcastle.
48.
Just because we were gonna.
Kinetoman.
Yeah, just because the other day we were toying with the terrible idea of doing Sting because he went to Warwick University for one term. All of those song titles would be, you know, Every Breath You Take. That'd be great when they're on a really hard climb. Don't stand so close to me for when Richard's being a bit weird.
Or if he hasn't had a shower after.
Yeah,
if he hasn't
had a shower, that's so true.
Yeah.
So I thought about that. And then maybe, I think the Beatles, you've got to do the Beatles. Got to go to Liverpool at some point,
which
don't you?
Which songs would you put in?
Help. Get me out of this podcast.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Hard Day's Night. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was eight days a week. Six stages, 8 days a week.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Good.
I haven't really thought about it, to be honest. He's desperately trying to find a rabbi. But I know, I'm trying to cover for Richard as he, you know, Googles.
One other thing, though, an interesting point about the Women's Tour is the reason they didn't call it the Women's Tour of Britain was because they wanted to leave open the possibility of taking it beyond Britain. And there was talk a couple of years ago of a prologue or an opening couple of stages in Rotterdam.
Be amazing. Wow. I'd love a Dutch opener.
What would be the references there, Ola?
That talk seems to have died down. I've not been aware of that recently, so
well,
I'm not sure.
Well, it could refer to, I guess, any of the Dutch Golden Age painting, which is all I've really looked into in terms of my Dutch education, the Night Watch.
Girl with a poem.
The Miniaturist is a lovely novel based in Amsterdam, so I could find some references from there.
I have put you on the spot here, and I feel like we're going to just insult anyone in the Netherlands. We're desperately seeking... Seeking something.
I would come up. Do you know what I could do, actually, if we had a Dutch grande part or the equivalent? I could just say it all in Dutch anyway, and then most of our listeners wouldn't know. So there you go. That's what
okay.
I do. I would try to baffle everyone.
That won't alienate
anyone.
And
then all of the
that's
Dutch
great.
Listeners would tell me I'm wrong.
Well,
yeah, and no one else would be listening. So
like I say,
great.
I know that was a plan at one point, but the best laid schemes of mice and men gang after glee.
Oh,
very good.
I'm not impressed because I can just see you Googling.
Oh, Amsterdam, yeah, des marins qui chantent. That's what I could do if it was in Amsterdam.
Hi, I'm Sarah Story. I'm the Academy Principal of the Skoda DSI Cycling Academy. Well, here at the concourse, just above this amazing track here at the London Velodrome, We've got what bikes set up, we've got some turbo trainers set up, and we're about to do our testing day to select 5 applicants for the Skoda DSi Cycling Academy for 2019.
So I do a lot of rowing as my main sport, but I've always enjoyed cycling as cross training for that and doing longer rides, so I thought I'd put my name down and see how it went and be invited. I'm Maddie, I live up in Chester, so I drove down last night to avoid the commute today. It was good fun, tough. I think I went off a bit light, so had to make up for it at the end. But it was I was at the right level of tired at the end, so happy with that. We have equivalent tests on rowing machines, but never on the watt bike, so it's all quite new for me. A lot of people cross over between rowing and cycling because it's a lot of leg based, but obviously in rowing you've got your arms to help you, whereas in cycling they're completely useless. So I think I'm getting better at knowing where my body needs to be at what point in the test. So I was able to gauge, I went off a bit light, and so I adjusted as I went through. Yeah, it's a plan, keep learning, get better, see how it goes.
Hi, my name is Matilda and I'm 10 years old. I'd like to know if you know about any young riders who could be future stars. Is the Women's Tour a good place to discover them? I love the podcast, it's much better than doing homework.
Well, another young listener, Matilda. I imagine she made the phone call herself, as opposed to, I don't want to, you know, doubt Martha's genuine interest in Martha.
Everyone's under
health.
Suspicion now,
but
aren't
I think,
they?
I suspect that Martha was at 4. I'm not sure she would have picked up the phone and managed.
You would be surprised.
A
WhatsApp that seems 4.
Voice just memo herself. Anyway, don't want to be too.
You'll
skeptical
be calling
about
all
that.
The podcasts.
Matilda, so is the Women's Tour a good place to discover new talent? Well, Leanne Lippert this week, 21 years old. She had a day in the green jersey. She stayed with Kasia Nviedoma. She's the only rider to stay with her on the uphill finish at Burton Dasset. Not just once, but 3 times up that climb. So I think she's definitely talented. And I think I mentioned this already, but the most telling thing is just the fact that her team, Sunweb, have got her under contract to the end of 2022. Suggests that in her they see somebody who they can really develop. And she looks good, and she's got all the ingredients, talent, and also she was disappointed, wasn't she, not to keep hold of the green jersey, which at 21... she probably, you know, shouldn't have been too hard on herself.
And 1 year older, Damie Vollering as well has been an absolute standout star of this spring. And sometimes I think because if we're not physically at a race and we've got a lot of one-day races, it's easy to almost lose people's names in the confusion of all the races. But when you're at a race and it's these 6 days long, you've got time to get to know the riders a little bit and time to study their form. And Damie Vollering is one who's really, really impressed me. She's 4th going into the final stage today. Just 22, definitely one who's on the way up. And that whole team really excites me, actually, Parkhotel Valkenburg, because it's just a group of young Dutch riders who seem to be really punching above their weight, really, when it comes to results this year and last year in particular.
Yeah, I think it's actually going back to Matilda's question on whether it's a good platform. I'm not sure that this race particularly is a good way of seeing all the riders, because so many big names come to it. They're normally working in support. I mean, of course, Leanne Lipper had a breakthrough, and Demi Vollering we're kind of aware of, but only from having a really impressive spring campaign. But I think it's not like you get like Festival LC Jacobs. I think that's where you actually see some new talent that you haven't seen before. And also I think in women's cycling, people mature a bit later. You know, all of our champions are kind of, you know, early 30s, mid 30s at the moment, most of the best riders in the world. And I think you see people like Lizzie Banks, Leia Thomas, who are older riders, late 20s, and they kind of have really proven themselves as people to watch, as riders to watch for the future. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're, you know, 20, 21.
It's funny as well, because with women's cycling, because we don't have an under 23 category, we've got young riders riding at the top level from a very young age. And sometimes you don't realise how young they still are when they have a bit of a standout performance. Abby Mae Parkinson is still, what age is she? 21, I think.
21, I think.
And it feels like she's been around for a long time, but that's because there is no transition for the women. They are juniors and then they're straight into the senior ranks. So I guess in that way, to contradict slightly, it is quite a good platform, but sometimes it feels like you've heard about the riders and heard of the riders for a long time already.
Hi team, this is Dina Blacking, London-based cyclist and coach. I was listening to your commentary on stage two at the Cyclo Park, and I'd say you spent a pretty good portion of the podcast talking about how it wasn't an exciting race. And Orla made the point that I appreciate that at this moment in time where we're trying to gain more interest from sponsors and broadcasters, there's a real need to demonstrate that women's racing is worth watching, which of course it is. But even with that in mind, I wonder if we can be overly critical of women's racing in a way that we aren't of men. So for example, the amount of men's races that aren't that interesting, but we don't hammer them in the same way and say, oh, they shouldn't race. Whereas quite often, I think someone uses the fact that our race of women isn't spectacularly interesting as a case for why we shouldn't support women's racing. And so I wonder if, as supporters of women's racing, actually maybe there's caution to be had when we spend time talking about how it wasn't an exciting race, because men's races are way more predictable and boring half the time anyway. So I say that slightly facetiously. Anyway, love to hear what your thoughts are. And thank you so much for the commentary and coverage of the Over Women's Tour.
Well, Dina, thank you very much for your question. It's an interesting one. I mean, we were, I guess, quite negative because we were standing watching the circuit race in the Kent Cycle Park. And I think we expected a lot from it in terms of, you know, attacks and splits and aggressive riding. What we actually saw was a fast but controlled race, which was not a great spectacle. And I think we were just calling it as we saw it. We were recording that day as the race went on. And I think we all wondered afterwards, especially when we'd spoken to some of the riders who told us how hard it had been, whether we were too hard. But then our job isn't to sell the sport, it's to talk about the sport and talk about the things that we find interesting in the sport. I don't mean in what I'm about to say that TV's job is to sell the sport, but TV is different because TV have to work with the pictures they've got. They've got to show the race. Whereas I think one of the luxuries of the podcast is being able to have a discussion around the race if the race isn't that exciting. I mean, you mentioned about the comparison between men's and women's. I take issue with that because I think when men's races are boring, we call them boring. And lots of the Giro this year was pretty boring. And on those days at the Giro, I wasn't there at the time, but Daniel and Lionel took themselves off to the Marco Pantani Museum and did a lot of stuff around the race and really made the podcast about something other than the race because the race was so dull.
I think as well it's a question of the maturity of the sport. If we're at the stage with the sport, or if you perceive it to be something that we have to sell, then fair enough, you've got to be bigging it up all the time and always looking for the positive. If you're taking a standpoint whereby you're giving the sport a bit of credibility and putting it on a level with other sports, then you have to call it whenever it's boring, because you are hoping that the audience also understand that then whenever the race is exciting, you're being genuine. I think it's disingenuous really if we're going to call a race as being very exciting when it's not. And also it sort of, I think that is important for people's understanding of what the racing is about. If you're watching a stage or listening about a stage for the first time and you think, oh, that's what is considered to be cycling, and you catch a glimpse of anything that's happened, you think, well, if that's exciting racing, I'm not sure I'm up for that sport. And I do think as well with men's sport, with men's cycling, we do call it boring when it needs to be. I mean, you say with television coverage, and yes, it's true, you do need to hype it up slightly, but I was working for Eurosport for the Giro, and for a lot of that race, we had to be very specific and say, you know, this isn't an uneventful stage, because the audience isn't fooled. You can't treat cycling fans as idiots. And also, but then it's your responsibility to find something exciting to say. And I completely, you know, if at the end of the day we've said it's boring and nothing else, then absolutely that's our fault. But I think the point is it's our responsibility then to find things that are interesting, because we're interested in it. So we have to convey that interest and the stories, or use that opportunity to explain more about the sport. You use that as a chance to get under the skin of the sport a little bit. But I don't think that it's our position, and I don't think it would be right of us to call a stage exciting if it simply wasn't.
Well, I think it'd be off-putting to someone who was new to the sport if we're trying to, you know, hype up a stage that we actually really found very boring, because they, you know, they would watch that and say, is this really what cycling's about? Is this really what is this really exciting? What they think is exciting? People would think we were we were mad to think something was exciting when it's just like a peloton of riders going around pretty much all together the whole day. And I think it's also a case of respect. It's a case of we want to analyse the racing aspect of it. And if there's not much racing to analyse, then we just can't do that. I think it's, we try and we obviously want to always touch on the kind of thematic issues with women's sport and women's cycling and its comparisons to men's cycling, where the sport will go and the kind of injustices that they might suffer. But I don't think we want to focus on that too much, because we want to show the respect to the riders that we can take their performances as professional athletes and you know, call it out when, you know, a team's got the tactics wrong, as they do in men's cycling all the time.
And I think as well that sometimes we're just asking questions that hopefully then generate a bit of a debate, because on that specific stage we were asking what should be done then to make today more exciting. Was it a case that the route wasn't sort of geared towards an exciting race? Was it that we simply did need a shorter stage in the middle of all of these long stages? Should the smaller teams be doing more to animate it? You know, what's the answer to that? Because we invest ourselves in women's cycling a lot, the three of us, you know, and so that in itself is a process of trying to bring more interest into the sport, trying to bring more investment into the sport. And you've got to ask the questions then, if a stage doesn't lend itself to being a good platform for the sport, why is that? And that's just a question that we ask, and maybe there is no answer, but it's a valid question.
I think you've hit the nail on the head in the sense that the best way to cover the sport is to criticise it, and the best way to respect the riders and the sport is to be able to criticise it, because it shows that you're taking the sport seriously. And I think, you know, that day in particular, I think there were a few things went wrong with that stage. All the riders saw how fast it had been, how hard it had been. I didn't buy it, because I thought that more riders would have been dropped if it had been really, really hard. And I just think that it was an opportunity for some of those teams that you mentioned to have a go, and they didn't. And that was really disappointing. And it was an opportunity to showcase a sport that wasn't seized. And I think there were loads of things they could have done differently. I think it could have been the first stage. It could have been an evening stage. It could have been maybe starting with a time trial for each of the riders, one lap of the circuit. There are lots of things they could have done, which I didn't. And I don't think ultimately it worked. But yeah, I think we will definitely criticise, because that, as I say, is a form of respect. But also, there will be stages that are boring. I mean, sport, you know, not every game of football is a 3-3 draw.
How dare you suggest every game of football is exciting?
Well, you get goalless draws in football, don't you? And yeah, you get boring stages in a Grand Tour. And it's, you sort of need the you need those stages in order to have, you need the lows in order to have the highs, don't you? So that's just part of a Grand Tour. An exception maybe was the Giro d'Italia last year, where there was excitement every day, and that was partly the course and partly the riders.
Hi guys, love the podcast. Especially important for the Femina, as there's rather less coverage than the men's side of things. I have a question regarding teams, particularly ones just associated with the men's teams, like Sunweb and CCC. We've seen a lot of them, but we never hear anything about the Lotto Soudal women's team, and they don't have a team in the OVO Women's Tour. What's happened to them? Is it just because they don't have such high profile female riders? Anyway, love to hear the answer. Thanks.
Hello, Orla, Rose and Richard. My question for you is regarding the disparity or lack of parity in the women's peloton that may be growing. Last year, one of the common themes that was spoken about was investment by men's teams into the women's peloton. My question is, do we see that physically in the peloton? I'd be interested to see if the investment of teams that have a men's component into the women's peloton is actually causing a greater disparity between the effects and outcomes of the races, because these teams that have lower budgets can't compete with the conveniences and comforts of larger teams.
Well, that was Graham and Andy. It was Graham asking about Lotto Soudal and Andy asking about the disparity between the men's and women's teams. Lotto Soudal do seem the poor relation, don't they? I mean, they've had some decent results this year, Lotto Capecchi in particular. They've had a team forever, but the team is certainly not at the level of the men. The women's team is not at the level of the men's team.
Lotto Soudal have had a team since 2006, which is a long time for a women's team, and a long time for a team that is attached to a men's team as well. And they have had in the past, they've got some great alumni. I mean, Yolene Dora was there, Eleanor Cicchini was there, Ashley Moorman was there. I think, yeah, they're not here. I think that that's partly to do with the fact that they have a roster of riders that is that includes track riders and mountain bikers, and so they get their road training through riding for Lotto Soudal, but that's not necessarily their main discipline, which I think means that we don't see them necessarily at the biggest races, and especially on an Olympic cycle. So we see less of them on this year, we'll see less of them next year, and then when those trackies and mountain bikers come back to the road for on those intervening years, then we'll see more of them in those years when there's less to do on the track.
Lizzie Dagnan was there, Lizzie Armistead, as she was also there for 1 year in 2009, where I think she, that's the year she won some medals on the track, wasn't it, at the World Championships.
I mean, it's curious because if you look at the men's team as well, Lotto have a strong tradition of nurturing talent, really, don't they? And they've got a really strong presence in Belgium and bringing riders through, and then you see riders coming back to the team once they've made it to the top level. And possibly that's what the women's team is about more than anything else. And the fact that they do have riders across different disciplines would certainly suggest that. Demi de Jong, the Dutch rider, finished third at Le Semaine des Dames this year. And you mentioned Lotto Capecchi. They don't have an awful lot of other results. But, I mean, if they are producing alumni of the caliber we're talking about, then it would, yeah, it would suggest that they're maybe a little bit more developmental. We've never actually spoken to anyone from Lotto women's team to see what their raison d'etre is, really. So that would be interesting to do. We could maybe try for that at La Course.
And on the difference between the men's and the women's teams, you're right that a lot of the teams do have camper vans here, and that's how they roll. But there are. I mean, we're looking
literally
across the field here, and Sunweb, CCC, and Trek Segafredo all have very big buses.
As does Bowles.
Yeah,
Bowles
were the
yeah,
first, really,
right,
weren't they, to
yeah
have a huge luxury coach. You were saying earlier that you didn't think it made much of a difference in terms of recovery, but I think it does. And Lizzie Dagnan was saying after one of the, I think it was after stage four, she said, oh, I'm just so grateful that I've got a shower on my bus. Like the other riders, a lot of the other riders would have had to sit in not necessarily wet clothes, but they would have had to have gone unwashed for an hour and a half of the journey. That just makes your bones that much more tired, and it makes recovery much more difficult.
Your bones. I got tired bones.
Does no one else get tired bones?
From not
having
a shower?
Oh, no, but it's a tiredness that goes into your bones. It feels so deep within you. It's not just muscular. I believe in tired bones.
Well, it's also not getting on with your
recovery,
is it? I mean, if you get washed, cleaned up, and then you can lie, you know, sit down with your feet up, then that is gonna aid your recovery more than sitting, putting on, you know, putting on extra layers, and not actually just getting all that done at the race and then being able to travel to the hotel and just relax, because, you know, instead you're putting off that time that should be spent recovering and resting. But yeah, it's funny actually, because I hadn't really thought about it, but you know, Canyon SRAM, they have pretty much like a ice cream van, don't they? It's like a minuscule little van that they have, and yet, you know, we always think of them as being one of those absolute top level teams. So I hadn't really thought about it before.
I mean, this isn't a performance issue really, but one little difference that you notice between the men's and the women's teams is that at the men's races, the fleet of vehicles turns up every day immaculate. You know, they've been washed overnight, they've been cleaned, they're gleaming. Here at the women's tour, there are just fewer people around the teams, and the teams, it's been a mucky old week, and the vehicles are pretty mucky, and they haven't been cleaned. That's not a criticism, it's just an observation that around men's teams there are always just loads of people.
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Loads of people doing lots of different jobs and lots of resources, which the women's teams don't have. It's a skeleton sort of operation. There'll be a DS, maybe two DSs. One of the DSs will be handing out bottles. There'll be maybe a soigneur, but not the the whole medical team that a men's team would have.
I have to say, though, in the question, it was pointed out the number of riders in the top 10 in the stage finish yesterday here and the female equivalent of men's teams. But if you look at the top 12 going into the stage today, 8 of those are on women's standalone teams. You've got Lizzie from Trek in the lead, but then you have Kasia from Canyon SRAM, then you've got Amy Peters from Bowles, Demi Vollering Park Hotel, which is a tiny team, Chrissy Majerus of Bowles, Lizzie Banks of Bigla. So actually there's only one of the top 6 here from a female arm of a men's team. So what I like very much actually is that in women's cycling we have this complete range and we're not completely tied to men's teams. I think the development of Trek and we really see them emerging as a strong solid unit at this race probably for the first time this season, that will be very interesting. We'll see if that's anything of a game changer, but Bowles Dolmans are still the dominant team across any given season. And I like that. I like that we have a mix-up of both men's teams with a women's team attached to them. Or maybe one day it'll be women's teams with the men's teams attached to them and standalone teams.
Yeah, a question by email, or actually it was a direct message on Twitter from Mike Fagan, brackets friend of the podcast. Thank you, Mike. Why don't female cyclists have nicknames?
Ooh.
He's suggesting Lizzie the Leopard, Kasia the Koala.
Koala.
Koalas
can be quite feisty, actually. That's a good one.
If I'm the buffalo, is Orla a gazelle and Rose a tigress?
Mike,
yes, I can confirm. I can confirm that. But there aren't so many nicknames in women's cycling as there are in men's cycling, are there?
But I just don't think that women give each other nicknames as much as men. There is one nickname in the women's peloton that I heard from the Canyon SRAM team car the other day, and that's Ho-Ho. We've got Roxanne Kneteman. Apparently, her nickname in the peloton is Ho-Ho because that's the noise that she makes as she tries to come up through the bunch and go, ho, 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 trying to make room for herself.
That's
but
great.
Apparently, because she does it all the time, she's completely ignored. So it might have worked the first few times because people
are
sort of taken aback by this
that?
And thinking,
yeah.
Oh, goodness, I must move out of her way. But because she just now, ho, ho, ho,
well,
ho, all the time,
that's
like Father
great.
Christmas moving through the
A
ho-ho.
Couple of episodes like ago, we had an interview with Roxanne Kneteman where she talked about retiring at the end of the year and said it's because she's very nervous in the peloton now. So
yeah.
She's maybe saying that quite a lot.
I just think that women don't give each other nicknames as much. We were chatting about this over dinner.
The big O.
The big O.
The OC. We call you the OC.
No, you
sometimes.
Don't.
We call you the OC.
Not
mind
to my
back.
Face, you don't. Lionel used to call me the assassin.
Yeah, that's right.
I never
got
the OC to my face. Not very original, the OC. It's like me calling you the RM.
I'm an RM too. We can be RMs together.
Yeah. True.
Right.
Yeah. Really
remember the American TV show, The OC? Wasn't that the name of show,
the
Orange County?
Yeah.
Misha Barton, one of the stars of that, I remember.
I think with the rider nicknames, I always think it's something that the Belgian and Dutch press kind of come up with. They're the ones that kind of push that kind of the Eagle of Eindhoven or whatever.
The Butterfly of Maastricht.
Yeah, the Hurricane of Herculum or whatever. You know, I always think that comes from there. I don't know, Walter, if you've got a sense of that. I've just always assumed it was from there. And so if they're not so engaged with women cycling, then maybe those nicknames
I think
don't
they are
stick,
actually
or
engaged with women cycling more so probably than we have here. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be curious to see what anybody thinks. I just don't think that women are given nicknames as
well,
much.
Well, Mitchell
and
Scott,
Aussies
they
probably
all do.
They probably
it,
just
they?
Add a Y to people's names.
Yeah, Mitchell and Scott call like, you know,
although the
Flutie
ones
or whatever.
Flutie.
Van Floyd. They do. I don't know why you're laughing. They do. If you ask them, they always call
like
Flutie did this, Flutie did that. And so I think that's part of that team, I guess.
Well, maybe I have to come
think
up
of other
few.
Ones.
I like Kasia the koala, though, because koalas are very cute and cuddly, but very dangerous.
Yeah, I kind of see that, actually.
Yeah.
Kind
could
of see
on.
It. A bit slow, though, aren't they?
Kasia the koala could catch on.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
It's Lawrence here in Stratford-upon-Avon. Question for the post-women's tour press conference. Just wondered what your thoughts are on the never-ending question of joint men's and women's races or separate events. Thinking at the moment that my attention is split between the Dauphiné in France and obviously the women's tour here in the UK. and comparing that to joint events such as tennis's US Open, Wimbledon, etc. Yeah, just keen to hear your thoughts on that. Cheers.
Thank you for your question, Lawrence. Joint men's and women's races. We have talked about that quite a lot, haven't we? Swings and roundabouts. I don't know. There's no clear answer. I mean, I like the fact that this race is standalone, but I referred to an earlier answer where I've been a little bit disappointed by the crowds this week.
Yeah, it's. I think we talked about it on our women's cycling show, our digital TV program.
Pilot program, yeah.
Which we did at Flanders. So go on to Cycling Podcast YouTube to check that out, where we had a bit of a back and forth about the pros and cons. And I think it's kind of theoretically it's a good idea, but practically doesn't really work out because it always seems like the women's race is like the support race and the women have to do a route that is around what the men are doing, and you know, if there's an issue with timing, it's the women's race that has to suffer with that, or the women end up having to race at like start at 9 and finish at 11 and then the men just have a normal time. So I think it's you know, to get that the men's exposure onto a women's race, that is a great idea, but I just don't think practically it works for most races.
When it works, though, it works wonderfully well. And I think this year's Amstel Gold was one of the best days of racing as a whole that I can remember seeing. And that wouldn't have been the same, I think, if we hadn't had the men's race as a dessert to the women's main course.
Yeah.
Because
yes,
both races were so brilliant to watch. The women's race, we all think,
the koala
better.
Bear won that.
The koala
she?
Bear won that, yeah.
Killer koala.
But, you know, I don't know, would Amstel Gold have been given live coverage if it hadn't been ahead of the men's race? Mm. Would we have had as wide an audience? Because a race of that quality and of that history, so many people are sitting down to WhatsApp for the day and maybe for the first time thinking, oh, I'll watch a women's race beforehand just because it's on.
Yep.
And that was one example where it worked perfectly well. Like in all of these things, when it works well, it works well, and when it doesn't, it doesn't.
So there's room for both.
Room
it's
for
not
both.
An either-or
yeah,
scenario.
I think there is.
Hello, this is a question for the team from a long-term listener and friend of the podcast from Not Watford regarding Thomas Campagna's comments about the Women's Tour and Giro Rosa not being compatible objectives. Is this really the case, given that they're 3 weeks apart, or is it more to do with the style of racing and the courses being different? And do you happen to know, are many of the riders from the Women's Tour going to the Giro Rosa at the start of July? And secondly, a question specifically for the Buffalo. How does working with your Cycling Podcast Féminin colleagues compare to your excellent and knowledgeable colleagues on the regular podcast? Thank you.
Thank you for your question there, Lionel, from Not Watford. Well, to answer your first question first, I think, as Campagna sort of hinted at, that it's a trend as much as anything. It's very difficult to know objectively whether they are incompatible, but if somebody does it, like Annemiek van Vleuten last year, and wins the race in such dominant fashion, then others do tend to copy. And I think it's more to do with the style of racing and the courses in particular maybe not being compatible. You know, you've got major climbs at the Giro Rosa, and so the best way to prepare for those major climbs is to go and train on major climbs.
Yeah, I think it's a trend. It's a fashion as much as anything else. Annemiek was really the first in the women's peloton to copy the men in terms of going to altitude and using training as preparation for races instead of racing as preparation for races. Anna van der Breggen is now doing the same thing. We may see more of that. I'm not sure how much more we'll see of it, really, because not all teams have the roster to be able to afford that luxury of allowing riders to not race some of the top races like this one in particular. I don't think they are incompatible, really. I think the problem, really, for everyone else is that Annemiek and Anna are so difficult to beat on those hard, hilly races that whatever they do will be the best preparation, really. And they're probably trying to each beat each other. Everyone else, then, well, a lot of the riders from here will go on to the Giro Rosa, so we will, you know, quite possibly have third place having come from here. That's assuming that Annemiek and Anna are first two, which I don't assume for 1 second. But I think it's a trend thing, and I think that's just how Annemiek certainly likes to prepare for these big races. Anna van der Breggen does more varied racing, certainly, these days. But no, I don't think they are incompatible, really.
I just think that the courses are very different, suit very different riders for the most part. I mean, in the women's peloton, more than the men's, people specialise less and they tend to do races that they're not in, you know, entirely compatible with. But you know, if you compare the Paso Gavia to Burton Dasset, I mean, they're just completely different climbs, different styles of racing. The climbs here are much more much punchier, and like Cassian Viadoma, for instance, is much
more...
The Koala Bear is much better suited to these kind of racing, and it is... I don't think it means it's less exciting or less, you know, animated. They're just different, and so that you'll get different riders doing different races.
But what I really want to know is the answer to the second part of that question, Richard. We compare across the different podcasting companions.
Just one more point on that. Epping, the climb Epping was a long, hard climb, which was kind of comparable to a Pyrenean pass. And also, I think the more widely in cycling, riders now train, they can prepare much better by training than by racing. It used to be that they raced in order to train, and now they train in order to race. And that's happened in men's cycling over the last decade or so to a greater extent, and it's happening in women's cycling too. The second question, they're more chatty, Rose and Orla.
And singy. I bet you don't get Garth Brooks.
I would say we spend longer when I'm with my excellent colleagues from the regular cycling podcast, whether that be Daniel and Lionel or Francois and Lionel. I would say we spend longer periods of time in what I would describe as companionable silence.
I'm a bit concerned that both you and our not Watford friend have prefixed the male half of our team as excellent, or words to that effect. Well, we're just the cycling podcast.
I think it's taken
feminine
as read that you're both excellent, but in a different way.
Yeah, you have fun with us, though, don't you?
I would say, admit it. It's more fun.
Yay!
I'm joking, Lionel. I'm joking.
No, he's not. It's not more fun. Lionel, if you're listening, which you are, we both know he's not, though.
It's just very different. It's I think over 6 days, it's
about as much as you can take. Last year, we all thought we had a wonderful time until we got to our course, and you then described the women's
intense
here as being intense.
Yeah,
well, there's an intensity to it because there's more energy. There's more energy all the time, and I would say
that
with Daniel and Lionel, there's less energy. It's more concentrated. We try and raise our game for the podcast. The rest of the time, we just slump into a kind of...
I do say, when I see you guys in a press room, so like at the Giro, you're always sitting quite far away from each other.
Yeah.
Whereas we kind of inflict up, me and Orla like to inflict ourselves together and on
chat,
you,
chat,
don't
chat,
we?
Chat,
we like
chat,
to,
chat,
yeah.
Chat,
we like
chat,
to just
chat,
sit
chat,
together.
Life is short. There's only so much time to get all your chatting in. So, you know, don't waste a second of it.
Thank you very much for your company.
The one of you, thank you.
For
and
your
the one
energy,
of you, Rose, thank you.
For your conversation.
Insights,
everything, singing,
philosophies,
fantastic,
dancing,
it's been great, it's been another
it
great week, and really enjoyed it.
Me
thank
too, I've loved it actually.
Well, yeah, thank
been
you,
a lovely
it's
holiday.
Been great, it has been really good, just we've done some great work, I think. Am I allowed to say that?
You have.
Okay, good, fine.
It's good, no, it's been good fun. And I
feel like Richard always, in hindsight, puts it down a little bit more. But at the time, he's always like dancing along, hearing his falsetto.
Oh, yeah. We have to have a little burst of your falsetto, maybe, to play us out.
Come on,
this car last night.
Shall we wrap things up?
We should.
And watch the finish of the final
stage. Let's do it. We do have a race to finish, yes.
Okay, thank you, Orla.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Orla.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast Feminine, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.